I think one of the problems is that the gatekeepers don't know anything about us. And I'm glad to see that there are more people of color being hired as editors, as publicists, as people who can open the door for those of us.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Artists Unscripted. I am your host, Kenesha King, and today we welcome in author Delma Llanos Figueroa. Figueroa is known for her novel, Daughters of the Stone, which follows five generations of Afro-Puerto Rican women in their spiritual journey through the past to the present. The novel has received several awards, including the 2010 finalist for the Penn Robert W. Bingham Prize and the 16th Annual National Indie Excellence Awards for Multicultural Fiction in 2020. Additionally, her short stories have appeared in various literary magazines and anthologies across the U.S., Africa, and Brazil. Delma herself has also received the 2021 NYSCA NYFA Artist Fellowship for Fiction. Let's welcome in Delma Llanos Figueroa. Thank you, Delma, for joining the podcast. We're going to get right into it. So when did you first begin writing stories? And how has that journey been as a storyteller?
Oh, my goodness. Well, the first story I ever wrote, I wrote in high school. And it was published in the high school magazine, which was called The Monroe Doctrine. I went to James Monroe High School here in the Bronx. And interestingly enough, someone just sent me a copy of it. And I hadn't seen it since 1967. So it was wonderful to see where I started. But for a while, I didn't get a lot of encouragement from traditional sources. So I wrote pretty much, I was a closet writer. I would write and keep it either to myself or within the family and friends. And when I started teaching, because I was a teacher for 30 years, all my students' stories just populated my life. And then as a young child, I was sent to live with my grandmother in Puerto Rico. And the women were all about sitting on the porches and rocking and telling family stories or stories of things that happened in the town. And that all fed into my nascent storyteller. And when I was 40, I decided, you know what? I've always wanted to write for publication. I'm going to start now so that when I retire, I can hit the ground running. And that's exactly what I did. And I started going to workshops. The Bronx Council on the Arts was the first organization that really funded me to do this. And so I will be eternally grateful to the Bronx Council on the Arts and to Bill Aguada, who was the director at that point. And once I started seeing that my local community was supporting me, I said, wait a minute, this has a shot. And I just kept at it. I really felt that I had a mission, that my ancestors didn't have voices, weren't allowed to have a voice and a face. And I was going to take over that and give them voices and faces.
What is it about creative writing and the storytelling that keeps you motivated?
Well, I think one of the reasons that I'm really passionate about it is, as much as I love stories growing up, they never included me or anybody who looked like me or sounded like me. I didn't read a book by a Puerto Rican, much less an Afro-Puerto Rican, until I was in college, which was ridiculous. So I got this traditional education and I was a good student, but I couldn't find myself there. And so when I graduated from college with an English and Spanish major, now it was my turn to tell my story my way.
How important was that for you growing up and you never really came across other African Puerto Rican storytellers like yourself? And it's not until college, you said, that you picked up your first book about that. How important was that for you, that moment, seeing that?
Well, the book was Down These Mean Streets, which I loved. Piri Thomas did a great job in that book, but he wrote about being an Afro-Puerto Rican in New York in the 50s. He was a street kid, right? So his life was full of danger and crime, and he ended up going to jail and all these things that really had nothing to do with my protective upbringing. But it was good to see that he had a voice, because if he had a voice, then I could have a voice. And I could tell, just like in American stories, there are such a variety of stories. The same thing with Puerto Rican stories. There isn't just one, as Chinonanda Adichie says. There isn't one narrative. In each culture, there are many narratives. So you can't say, well, I read this book and now I know all about Puerto Ricans. No. So that kept me going, the need to put my story out there.
That's beautiful. And you started with Daughters of the Stone, correct? You've done that and you've published that over a decade ago. It has won many awards.
Yes. Daughters of the Stone actually is now 13 years old. When it sold out in hardcover, we republished it in paperback. I always wanted it to be in paperback because not everybody in our community can afford to spend $30 on a hardcover book. Not to mention librarians and teachers who are on a strict budget. You know, so how are the kids going to get to see it? So we published it 3 years ago. It's coming up on its third anniversary. I'm so proud of that. And there have been about 26 universities that have taught it in many departments, whether Africana studies or Latino studies or women's studies or whatever. I don't care what department. I'm blessed that my voice is a voice that is heard. I find it amazing that now I'm being asked to read by professors who first read the book when it came out. So I'm an elder and I love being an elder. I am motivated by all those folks out there, all those Puerto Rican, Afro-Puerto Rican girls and African-American girls and all the girls who don't see themselves in their literature. And it's time to say, we're here, we've been here, we're going to be here. So you might as well deal with us.
That's powerful. And I started reading Daughters of the Stone, actually. Oh my gosh, you almost made me cry twice. And I'm in just part one. Because when I was reading it, I'm like, how deep is this going to go? And you just dove right into pain of the past and actually capturing how that time period was. How were you able to recollect all those moments, by the way, even though you weren't born in that time?
Right. A lot of it was research. I have a very strong tie to the island. I go back every 2 years or so for research purposes. And I met with scholars and engineers. And I looked for the oldest people I could find and asked them about their childhood. I love oral histories. And just sitting around and listening to people saying, girl, you should have seen when I was 2 years old, blah, 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 blah. It's like, yes, ma'am. Tell me more. I love honoring the past because people think the past is gone. No, the past is not gone. We're carrying the past in our soul, in our skin, for those of us who are not white. And so what can we learn from the past to help us get through the present and build for the future and leave something for our children? And I think that the traditional education that we have had in the past did not include our story sufficiently or honestly. And it's not that I'm looking for pie in the sky. There is a lot of pain. There is a lot of tragedy. There was a lot of brutality and still is. All we have to do is turn on the TV. But we're here. So if we're here, our folks in the past got through that. They gave us the strength to get through that. And so my way of honoring them and giving the younger generation something to aspire to is to say that we will endure. We will keep going. We will be here. And the world will have to deal with us being here.
Because you speak on resilience as an African-American, Puerto Rican, you know, ethnicity, would you say that's one of the biggest lessons you've learned in collecting all these memories and stories from our elders?
Well, I think even as a child, I recognized that what I was watching on television had no reality. It had nothing to do with my life. So it wasn't that I came to a great realization about that, as much as it is realizing that we have to take control of our stories. all people of color have to take control of our stories. Because if you let the conqueror tell the tale, I love the African proverb that says, you don't know what happened until you speak to the lion. You can't just speak to the hunter. You have to speak to the lion. And so, yeah, I just knew instinctively that there was more that needed to be told. And we had to tell it. Can't depend on somebody else.
You're such an inspiration for a storyteller like myself.
And I have to say that it's not even just a matter of color, although color has a lot to do with it. Race has a lot to do with it. But there are, how many novels do we have about poor whites, about poor rural anybody? The novels that we generally see are about people who have the privilege of being able to tell their stories. So I welcome stories by working class folk, by anybody who is the other, women, old folks, children, all of them have their own voices.
Now, do you relate to any of the characters in the novel?
Well, I relate to all of them on a certain level, but I absolutely relate to Carissa, the last character, because she's my contemporary. And a lot of the things that happen in her life are manifestations of things that may have happened to one degree or another in my life. So, for instance, her parents went from Puerto Rico to the United States in the 1950s. So did mine. Her father had a hard time acclimating to this new world that he had come to. So did her mother. So did every immigrant, I would imagine. And so did mine. She did not get very much encouragement in finding a writing career and finding a voice. She didn't get it from the educational system. She didn't get it from anywhere. It had to come from herself and depend on herself. And so those aspects of that character are very much grounded in who I am. But it's not biography. It's a stroke here and there.
Why do you think it's so hard to receive the support as a person of color and a writer? Because you've mentioned that a couple of times, and it is true. We do, you know, struggle with finding our own voices and be able to put it out there. Why do you think it's so hard for us to do that?
Well, I think, first of all, things have changed. We are seeing a lot more voices of color being published, thank goodness. I think one of the problems is that the gatekeepers don't know anything about us. And I'm glad to see that there are more people of color being hired as editors, as publicists, as people who can open the door for those of us. I think that the Black Lives Matter movement has really crystallized in the American consciousness. Whether people agree with it or not, they know it's there. I was too old to be out in the streets yelling and screaming, but I was part of demonstrations and was so happy to see that it was a multi-ethnic, multicultural group of people who are saying, wait a minute, this is not right. Something is wrong and something has to change. So I do see progress, but I'm also all about the historical truth. And we've seen progress before in the past, and then it's been yanked back, right? And I think we're in a stage where people want to yank it back, but I don't think that we're at a stage where people are willing to just sit back quietly and accept whatever's decided.
And can you elaborate on that about taking it back? It's almost like taking 4 steps forward and like 2 steps back almost.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was around for the civil rights movement, and I know how many sacrifices were made. Let's just take the issue of voting rights, you know, and now all of a sudden, here's this monster again, with people being denied their voices in the polls. But I don't want to get into all of that because we'll never get out of it. But there are, if you don't attend, if you don't study the past, you will be repeating it and repeating it and repeating it. And so that's what I'm hoping my books do, allow for a dialogue based on the story. So it's not like, well, you did this to me and you did that to me and no, let's discuss this unemotionally as something that has happened in the past. And what are we going to do to make sure that it doesn't continue to happen? So I think that when people get all heated up, then people retreat and there's no progress. But I'm hoping that I'm creating an arena for people to talk about racism, to talk about rape, to talk about all kinds of issues that people don't want to talk about and don't want to look at. But if we don't discuss it, that wound is just going to fester.
You are definitely paving a way for a brighter future, for sure. Now, you have another novel that's coming up called A Woman of Endurance, and that's coming out in April of next year, 2022. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
First of all, both novels are available on my webpage now because you can pre-order A Woman of Endurance and it will be sent to you directly if you pre-order. And Daughters of the Stone is also. So people who are interested can go to my website and order both. Also, they can put their name on my mailing list so they can keep track of where I am and what I'm doing. But anyway, when I wrote Daughters of the Stone, it was 528 pages long, the manuscript. I was told I had to cut out 200 pages. We won't go into how hard that was, but they said, we want to know more. What happens at the end? Where do these people go? And so I realized that this wasn't a one book deal, that the story would encompass much more. So there will be 5 books, at least that's what I'm planning. They're not sequels, but they are companion pieces. So characters in one will show up in the other. And so A Woman of Endurance is about one of the characters that's introduced in Daughters of the Stone, and she gets her own story. And her story is that she was purchased as a breeder. And every time she had a baby, it was taken away and sold. And so I wanted to take a look at that experience of African women and think about what got them through that, through serial rape, and then losing their baby over and over and over again. And how do you heal from that? And so this novel is all about the Black community within the book, the enslaved community and how they interacted with each other. Yes, they existed as enslaved people, but they were much more than just slaves. They had a life. And what was that life? And what kept them going? So that's what this novel is all about. And I won't say much else because then you won't buy the book. So.
Oh, no, I'm definitely going to buy every single book. Like with Daughters of the Stone, I'm so deep into it. Like I find myself just reading a page over and over again and thinking, wow, this really happened. I can't imagine even being in that position, in that situation. And yet our ancestors have been through it all. Oh, they've lived their life even before they have been purchased. And then they still had to carry on and live a new life under other people's choices, demands, and brutality. That's insane to even think about. And I'm happy that you are able to go out and collect these stories for myself and for other storytellers out there to learn and to read about our history. It's amazing.
And I'm also very enthusiastic about other younger writers who are coming up and making sure that they have voices, and especially the Bronx community. I do a lot of events in the Bronx, and there's always someone somewhere in there who raises their hand timidly and says, well, I'm sort of thinking of writing something. And my thing is, go for it. Read as much as you can read. Write as much as you can write. When you read, think about what works about this book and what doesn't work about this book. I have read books I can't stand. And they have been valuable to me because I know that's not where I want to go. That's not how I want to do it. So I think that the more exposure you have to things you love and to things you don't love, the more you can define who you are and what your voice is. And I have a Figueroa Sisters Fellowship, which is for the other end of the spectrum for women over 50 who have always wanted to write and never had the chance. And that fellowship will allow them to go to writing workshops and put their work out there and start dealing with, what do I have to do to get this published? So that's what I'm trying to do.
That's a lot, but that's great. Everything is great. I know you mentioned it before, but where can people follow you and contact you if they want to attend any of your workshops, if they want to, you know, learn more about you and the book and buy the book?
Okay. Well, you have my web address, which is dalmayanosfigueroa.com. If you go to the first page all the way at the bottom, there's a place for you to sign up to my mailing list. And then once a month, you'll get a newsletter letting you know what's going on in my life. And so if someone's interested, for instance, in the fellowship, in the Figueroa Sisters Fellowship, they can find out how to apply for it through that newsletter. So Comité de Noviembre is a marketplace for Puerto Rican artists that will be held at Hostos Community College. And you can either buy items online or you can go down to the marketplace. And my book is going to be online, so you could just log on. That information will also be in my newsletter. So I think that those are multiple ways. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. You can friend me on Facebook. So there are lots of places, lots of ways of accessing the information. And all of it is on my website.
Thank you, Dalma, for joining Artists Unscripted, and congratulations on your recent Artist Awards for Fiction. It was a pleasure having you tell your story and learning more about your novel, Daughters of the Stone, as well as reading it myself. I hope you come back in the future and we can talk about A Woman of Endurance. To learn more about Dalma Llanos Figueroa and her upcoming novels, follow her online at www.dalmayanosfigueroa.com. Artists Unscripted is a BronxNet production hosted by Kenesha King, produced by executive producer Michael Maxnabi, produced by Jen Beagle, edited by Abby Franz. Music is Wasted Education by Blue Topaz. Listen to this podcast and more on bronxnet.org/listen. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram at BronxNet TV and on Facebook and YouTube at BronxNet Television. We'll be right back.